Coming up on Windows Weekly, Leo is out of town, but Paul and Mary Jill let me talk with them about Windows, and we talked about a lot of good stuff. The newest version of Windows is coming in October. Doesn't have a fancy name, but does have some fancy stuff in it. What happens when lightning strikes a data center? We've got gaming picks. We've got Surface picks. We've got it all coming up. Stay with us.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Windows Weekly, episode 585, recorded Wednesday, September 5th, 2018. Silly hipster affectations. Windows Weekly is brought to you by WordPress. Reach more customers when you build your business website on WordPress.com. Plans start at just $4 a month. Get 15% off any new plan at WordPress.com/Windows. And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/windows. And by Qualcomm Snapdragon. According to Ookla, Android smartphones with Snapdragon 845 from Qualcomm had faster data speeds on AT&T and T-Mobile than non-Android phones with Intel modems based on over a million real-world tests done in Q2 2018. See all the data for yourself at qualcomm.com/twit. Welcome to Windows Weekly. I am not Leo Laporte. I am Megan Maroney because Leo Laporte is on vacation. But the important people are here, Mary Jo Foley and Paul Theriot, to talk all about Windows with me. Welcome to your show.
Thank you.
You've come at an auspicious time.
Oh, have I?
No. Unfortunately. We're in kind of the dead area between stuff happening. And
Well, and then there's no fancy names for stuff. Like, we don't get to call things Redstone anymore. Now they have the boring names.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Windows 10, October 2018 update. Couldn't they think of something more interesting?
It's boring, but it's way better than the other names they were coming up with, like Creators Update, Spring Creators Updates, Fall Creators Update. At least you know what it is. It's the update in October 2018. It's not fancy, but at least it tells you what it is.
Yeah, it doesn't confuse half the world. It doesn't upset the number of people that didn't find anything creative in it. It's obvious when it was released, so where it factors into the scheme of things. And I think it also kind of reflects the nature of this bill, version, just like the nature of the previous version, which was the April, or was it the March? April update. Which is, there wasn't a lot of nonsense stuff going on there. It was more about productivity and refinements. And it's the kind of thing that I think Windows, should be getting an update like. You know, it's the type of update that Windows should have, given the fact that it's not a six-year-old mobile platform anymore.
And I think I remember when Leo was on his fall vacation last fall when it was the Creators update. And then we were actually complaining that it wasn't enough stuff for creators. So apparently they heard us and we're never happy.
That's true. We are never happy. But I think, or I'm never happy for sure. But I like this. I like the nature of this update. And I think, it's not exciting, whatever. It doesn't have to be exciting. I mean, it's just version 1803, the October 2018 update. It's fine. That's a good way to do it. It's nice not to have to complain about something silly.
And when can we get it? When can I get it on my Windows device?
I'm assuming mainstream users will get it in October, since it's called the October update.
Well, you're really not reading between the lines too much then.
I'm really going out on a limb on that.
What's
funny? Sure. Right before they did this announcement, I was kind of speculating they might surprise us and start rolling it out in September, because it feels like they're going to be done a little earlier. That, yeah. You do?
Yeah.
Just for insiders, you think?
Normally that would be what I would say, but I think with Ignite happening, And I think there's a desire to show some form of progress. I find it really weird that they keep saying nearly 700 million devices. I mean, I think one of the things that they could tout accurately at Ignite is the speed at which they rolled out the last update and then the speed at which they've moved along to this next version, because it kind of ties in nicely with this kind of back and forth that's been going on ever since Microsoft claimed that Windows was a service. And there have been critics on one side saying that this is too fast. You can't, this kind of momentum can't be sustained. And, they had reliability problems last year. But this year, we don't know how this one's going to go yet, obviously. But it's fairly impressive to me, the rate at which the previous update has rolled out and the kind of non-issue that it's been as far as people having issues, having problems.
And so what about that 700, nearly 700 million devices? Why haven't they gotten to 700 million yet?
Yeah, well, good question.
We've asked. We've asked a few times, and they've just said, the figure stands. We're not telling you anything more than that. Why we keep saying nearly? And they've been saying nearly since March of this year, by the way.
Yeah, it's actually getting weird, I would say, at this point.
Yeah. I bet you're right that it's because of Ignite and they're trying to have some big momentum thing there. And if they don't say it at Ignite, this is very worrisome because
it's inexplicable. I mean, it's impossible really. Right. Yeah. I mean, they've released several milestones for the usage numbers of Windows 10. And every time they do, I do a little bit of back of the napkin math. And this is the kind of the run rate at which new devices are coming online. And it was really big at first. It went down again, but then it's been steadily going up. And the last time I did this, whenever the last milestone was 600 million, maybe, or 650, whatever it was, they were at almost 17 million new devices per month. Mm-hmm. And if you assume that it's flat, and they did, Terry Myerson said it, like you said, late March, they said it again at Build. They said it again at various times. They said it with their earnings at the end of June. They said it this past week. 17 million times, five or six. I mean, we're getting into the point where you have to have crossed this milestone. It actually doesn't make any sense. 601 million is not nearly 700 million. So you have to sort of assume it was in the 770s, 780s. I don't know what, but I don't know. I don't know what to attribute this to.
One reader gave me an interesting theory on this, and I don't know if it's true. It just was kind of an interesting idea. He said, right now, most of the growth in Windows 10 in terms of new users being added is enterprise, right? Like, it's the consumers have it. And he said, if you're an enterprise user, you technically, at least if you're an enterprise, Windows 10 enterprise SKU user, you can turn off a lot of the telemetry that Microsoft uses to collect data on how many devices have this on it.
But, I mean, can you turn off the telemetry that tells Microsoft you're using Windows 10? I mean, just to get Windows updates, you'd have to know that.
You have to have some, you have to be connected in some way, right?
Yeah.
Like to get security updates you do. But, I wonder if maybe they miscounted up till then, and then now they've kind of like lost the plot. I don't know. Like, it's so inexplicable that they're not giving the number.
Yep. It literally, given the data we've been given, is not explainable. It something's wrong.
Yeah.
And so what is going to be in this release that we haven't gotten before? Anything worth talking about?
It's interesting. I would say that there are no blockbuster major new features in this release. And what there are instead are a ton of smaller things. And so I have a Windows 10 book that I update, for each version, usually belatedly. It's kind of convoluted. I mean, over the past, not the last release, but the two before that, especially, there was so much new stuff in every release, it kind of got hard to keep track of it all. If you look at the list of new features, and I have kind of listed it out, just not all in one place. There are a ton of them, but they're all pretty small. And so when I update the book, I create a new version of the chapter. I kind of listed all the new stuff that has to be added. And what's interesting about that is that a lot of it is kind of what I would call user interface or user experience type changes. And so if you look at something like Microsoft Edge, It doesn't really have any blockbuster new end user type features. It does, however, look completely different than it did before. Most of the major UI that anyone would touch, you know, with, or click on or whatever, is different in some way. You know, the main toolbar, the settings more menu, the settings interface, the what used to be called the hub, the, you know, the favorites, the downloads, the history, and all that stuff. It all looks very different. Now, that's not something I have to explain in a book how to use the I have to change alter the descriptions of some things, but it's not exactly a, you know, like a big thing. Like they changed a few toolbars, the reading modes have been improved. They've spread the learning tools that they have in the product to different document types and so forth. And I'm not really describing anything. You know, we're not talking about a new paradigm for web browsing here. It's just kind of fit and finish type stuff. And that, I think that's...
You are forgetting one big one, though.
Okay.
How about the new notepad features?
Yeah, like I said, nothing.
Come on.
Well, guys, okay. In a book about Windows 10, I would never cover Notepad. But if I did, and I were to look at, because it's not much to say, what does it have? Unix-style line endings, if you want that. What else is there? I don't even know.
Dark theme? Is there dark theme now? I don't know. I don't care about that. But no, there's a bunch of new Notepads. How about Cloud Clipboard?
Yeah.
That's interesting, right?
It's interesting.
You know what we don't know, though? That we don't know, like, the really meatier new features. Like, we don't have a list of what's new security-wise. Like, we can go back and pull out bits and pieces in different, you know, insider posts. There's also that thing that was called Windows 10 Enterprise Remote Sessions Edition, which the Walking Cat now says is called Windows 10 Enterprise for Virtual Desktops. That, if it is in the October update, is a huge thing because it'll give people a new way to do virtual desktops in Windows 10 Enterprise. So there are some things that are there that I bet they're trying to, again, save for Ignite, like to make a bigger deal out of them.
Yeah.
But nothing, you know, I agree with you. Nothing like that you're like, whoa, you know, like this is going to change everybody's usage of Windows.
The original plans here, as I understand it, was that, you know, the April update was going to have one major feature, right? And this version was going to have one major new feature. And the version for the major new feature for this version was sets. And sets ended up being pushed back, right? So sets may be something that appears in the next release. I would consider that a major new feature. I don't consider its loss a major deal. I mean, I think, you know, for most people, whatever. But it would have been a nice change, you know, an interesting new change. That just didn't make it. So, but it's fine because, like I said, I actually prefer it this way. I don't want to have to rethink and relearn things every time, you know, Windows flips a version. And, you know, in the old days, they used to change the location of things in the start menu, just kind of arbitrarily. You know, the Edge things I just mentioned are a little bit like that, but really what they're related to are just the fact that this application has gotten more complex. It's kind of like the settings app in Windows 10. If you go back to the first version, there were probably like six top-level items. It was the simplest UI in the world. And it's gotten, you know, a little more, you know, it's got a bunch of new stuff over time. Now there's like a sidebar and there's all these additional features. And it's just picked up a bunch of functionality. And that's kind of what's happened to Edge. It's kind of like a feature creep kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm. So what do you expect on at Ignite? It's September 24th.
Yep.
Correct. And so they might come up with a number that makes more sense than nearly 700 million devices since March.
I don't know about the 700 million number, but one thing that they could do, and they have done from time to time, is talk about enterprise deployment of Windows 10 specifically, right? Mm-hmm. And I do think that would be kind of interesting because the real bump we're going to see in Windows 10 usage going forward, like Mary Jo said, is going to come from businesses. And this is the most important to market to Microsoft. It is the one they still control very strongly. And I could see that, you know, and there what you're doing is you're not really comparing. It doesn't even have to be really raw numbers per se, but rather the percentage of Windows 10 PCs in the enterprise versus older versions of Windows. You know, what you want to see is that companies are actually proactively moving past Windows 7 or Windows 8.1 or whatever to get onto the latest Windows version. And then maybe even talk a little bit about the span of Windows 10 versions. Sorry.
Haven't they said something like when they gave that almost 700 million number, I'm thinking they told us 200 million of those were enterprise devices
I don't remember the number, but there was figure in there. That's kind of interesting because most people would assume that across Windows that 50 to 65% of all PCs in the world running Windows are in businesses, right? It's got to be up to two-thirds of all of them. And that was actually kind of a small percentage, relatively speaking, of Windows 10 PCs. But that the suggestion there is that there's a lot of headroom for upgrade growth.
Right. And when I talked to the Microsoft financial people at the last earnings call, I said to them, you know, have you been seeing a lot of uptick from people upgrading from Windows 7 to Windows 10? And they said, well, not yet. And I was like, oh.
Yikes.
I'm like, okay, well, I guess they still have 2 years. You know, January 2020 is when Windows 7 goes out of support. And if you remember, a lot of enterprises didn't even go to Windows 7 until Windows 10 had already launched. Like they had just made the move to 7 and they were like, well, we're not moving to 10 for a while. Like we're not going to immediately go to 10. So
businesses have always moved slow and that kind of thing. But you know, the other half of this, and this is probably just as important to Microsoft, is the, the amount of money they would make per user on as companies in this case upgrade, right? And so this is something you see in a lot of different markets. Like Apple has a strategy to raise the average selling price of an iPhone because that's their primary product. The smartphone market has flattened, and the way you can continue making more revenues is to, you know, charge more for each one that you sell. In Microsoft's case, the offering isn't Windows 10 Enterprise Pro or something. It's Microsoft 365, right? Like they've added this kind of selection of offerings that enterprise customers can choose from. And you can just get a straight up OS on a PC. But what they would prefer to have you do, obviously, is get the full meal deal, which is Office 365 plus the management plus Windows 10. And that's, kind of the future of this thing, really, which is why it was billed this year, where Windows 10 was not even kind of its own thing. It was just part of Microsoft 365. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So anything else to say about the October update?
Well, one thing, people have been asking us about the follow-on, which is now called 19H1, not called Redstone 6. And
sounds like a kind of disease you would get going to Africa.
I've been standing in front of the mirror practicing saying 19H1 because every time I go to say it, I'm like, H119... No, that's not the name. It's just like so hard to get used to the new naming convention, but that's how they're going to do it. And I don't know if that's how they'll call it when it comes out or if they'll continue with the month year thing. Like they'll say it'll be April, 2019 update or how they're going to do that. But there hasn't been a new build of this in the skip ahead ring for almost 3 weeks. And they just tweeted about this today and they're like, we're still working on looking at, a good candidate to release and we don't have anything yet. So, most of their attention on the Windows team right now is on finishing Redstone 5.
I think that's why.
That's why.
Right. I mean, and I think that 3 week time period is what you need to know about what we used to call the release candidate phase, right? It coincides with the builds with no new features, the builds with no watermark on the desktop, which they insist doesn't mean anything, but of course it does.
Right.
And I think that's the point of it. And it's funny, I wrote an entire article where I used the wrong naming convention. So it's, what is it really? It's 9H1, and I think I wrote H119 or something. I can't get it straight there. My theory around that, I don't think I expressed this very well in an article, but what I really meant was, as part of Microsoft 365, I think that what Microsoft wants to do is make Windows 10 consistent with the other offerings in that subscription, right? So that means a couple of different things. It means a release cadence. They're going to be updated on the same basic schedule and so forth. But it might also mean aligning the version numbers and also the names you use to describe those things. I don't know how they do that exactly because the real outlier here, from what I can tell, is actually Office. I mean, Office is updated on an almost spastic schedule across all of the many platforms on which it runs. Windows 10, we've complained that updating, two feature releases a year is too much. Office releases, 12 or more feature releases essentially across all the products every year easily. But I was wondering, I guess what I was trying to express at the time, and I went back and looked at it, I was like, I didn't quite get this out, was it seems to me that they're going to want to make those things consistent. And that, that if there is a change in the name, if they go away from version 1803 or whatever, that kind of name, or from the April 2018 style mm-hmm. name for the update, that it might be to make it consistent across all of those offerings, further driving home the fact that they're all part of a thing, you know, and not necessarily standalone products.
Right, because it is pretty confusing. Like HoloLens doesn't finalize at the same time as Windows 10 IoT, which doesn't finalize at the same time as Xbox, and supposedly they're all Windows 10, right? So that is confusing.
Yeah.
I feel like we're in, you know, once they move Windows engineering, as we've said before, to the Azure/Windows Server team, it kind of felt like, okay, now things are going to get more no-nonsense and more practical and less fluffy. So
and it's happened, right? Naming. I mean, we've seen that so far with the naming this year. And this 19.1H, is that, no, 19H1 or whatever, I think is 19. Another indication of that. You know, we're not going to have a little video game name to describe an operating system update. We're just going to call it this thing, you know. And I think that's right for the product, too.
Shall we move on to the next story about the first Snapdragon 850 based PC?
Yeah. It's hard for me to even remember the timeline on this, but let's just say that this past spring, I believe there were three PCs that were released with the Qualcomm Snapdragon 835, which it was found to be woefully inadequate for running Windows, right? It's just... Yeah, the performance is just not there. And then there are a lot of compatibility issues as well. Out of the box, it couldn't run any 64-bit code. But even as that is being updated, it still can't run 64-bit x86 code. You know, so a lot of desktop applications that people are used to using will not run, potentially ever, which is kind of a problem. Also, if you have device drivers for like an all-in-one printer, a scanner, or whatever it might be, those will have been written to x86, x64. Those will never install on a Qualcomm-based Windows 10 on ARM system. So we've been kind of looking forward to these subsequent generations of the chipset for the improvements. And so back in, I want to say May or June, Qualcomm announced the 850. And they were basically talking about a 30% performance boost. I think it was a 20% battery life boost, which is kind of incredible. It was already, they were already rated about 20 hours. Better LTE. I think the speeds went from a gigabit to 1.2 gigabits. And that's about it, I guess. That's probably most of it. And then there were rumors, which Qualcomm has not really addressed publicly, about a Snapdragon 1000. That name might be wrong, but ARM, the makers of the underlying chipset that Qualcomm improves and then sells itself, have announced their own roadmap. And it corresponds to what we thought this 1000 thing would be. So... Here it is. It was just the first of the new PCs based on the Snapdragon 850 was just announced at IFA last week in Berlin. And so we've been looking forward to this. Here we go. And so Lenovo has supplied a bunch of information about this device. I don't have one yet to review. I'm very interested to see if this at all addresses the performance issues, which is the one thing it could do. What is 30% of terrible? You know, I don't know. Or terrible plus 30% maybe is the right way to say it. I don't know. Unfortunately, for all of their copious marketing materials, and they really did pump out a bunch of information about this device, with regards to the performance, the battery life, and the capabilities of the LTE modem, which I care less about, all they did was parrot exactly what Qualcomm had said months earlier. They literally provided no unique information about this particular device. So... Mm-hmm. As of today, I just don't know. You know, when they announced the 835 devices, I think that was December 2017, I guess. You know, we played with them, the prototypes, you know, for a little while, and they seemed okay. So, you know, that kind of experience is obviously not necessarily representative of what it's really like in the real world. So we just have to wait and see. So we're kind of waiting for this milestone. It happened, and now we still know nothing new about this device or this chipset, I should say, unfortunately.
I kind of feel like, though, I think you brought it up on one of the recent shows, that this is kind of just like a holding pattern chip, right? It's like, okay, there are going to be some devices with this thing, but it's not really what most OEMs probably including Microsoft too, are going to be like really touting when they tout these kind of devices. So yeah. I'm not surprised there isn't like a lot of hoopla around it. It's like, okay, yeah, here are the 850s and there's going to be something else. We can't talk about it yet.
You know? Yeah, I think, right. I think we're going to see very few new PCs based on this thing because it is kind of an interim deal. It's the first Snapdragon chip that's been custom tailored for PCs. It's interesting on that note. But the gains that are coming in future versions are going to be much greater. In fact, I was talking to Ryan Schroud, who I believe does a show on Twit, and he was saying possibly as much as 2x performance improvement over the previous generation. That's humongous, right? And that's what is necessary for these devices. So, yeah, it's, you know, the supposition here is there's a roadmap. If they didn't release this, they might have been PC makers who said, you know what, forget it. We're not doing this anymore. I don't think we're going to see a lot. We didn't see a lot of uptick on Gen 1, you know, and that's probably right. For the best. But yeah. I would be surprised if there were more than two or three of these things. And then all bets are off because Qualcomm has an event every December. They're going to announce their new, whatever they call it, Snapdragon something that will offer whatever percentage. And this is what we're going to have to pay attention to next time. And then I would expect that the new devices based on that chipset would be announced at CES in January and then would ship anywhere from February to, you know, April, whatever, somewhere in that time frame, just like they did this past year.
Well, I want to talk about Office 365 home and premium subscriptions and more on ARM if there's more to be said. Sounds like there might not be. But first, I want to take a second to thank our sponsor, which is WordPress. Now, I have my website on WordPress. It's just a nice place to have on the web. It's my little home on the web when people want to know who the heck is this person that is hosting Windows Weekly and has a sticker with a misspelled Windows on her Mac. Then they can go to MeganMaroney.com and just find my place. So it was super easy. I don't have a lot of time to mess with websites and design and all that stuff. And I didn't have to because the people at WordPress, basically they have templates, they have help, and it's great. There are really no limits. So you can turn your vision, whatever your vision might be, into reality and launch your website on WordPress.com. It's hassle-free. They take care of the hosting, the security, the software updates, so you can focus on your site because there's nothing worse than worrying about someone taking over your website and drawing mustaches all over your pictures. That's never happened to me, and I don't worry about it because I'm on WordPress. You can upload images, video, audio, more, plus import and export content to and from your WordPress website. It's your site. It's your home. It's your content. Choose from hundreds of designs to match your vision and establish your brand, no matter how much design experience you have. And with the WordPress app, you can manage your site on the go. So you can manage it from your Surface Go, or you can manage it from your Android phone or your iPhone or your tablet or whatever device you have. You can use the app and you can update your site from wherever you are. You can launch your website with confidence, knowing you can get help from a 24/7 support team when you need it. WordPress plans start at just $4 a month for all of this. The help, the design, the security, the peace of mind. 31% of all websites run on WordPress. Right now, just for you listeners and viewers of Windows Weekly, you can get 15% off any new plan purchase. That's 15%. If you have a new plan, go to wordpress.com/windows. Don't forget to add Windows at the end of there. That way that they know we sent you there. And then you can create your website. wordpress.com/windows for 15% off your new website. wordpress.com/windows. And we thank WordPress for their support of Windows Weekly. All right, subscriptions, services, personal and office.
I just wanted to highlight this thing. I don't know if you saw this, Mary Jo, but someone is reporting that they're getting a pop-up in Windows 10 for a preview build of Windows 10 that's in the fast ring on computers that are not in the Insider Preview. And this is something that had happened, I believe, a week or two ago. Mm-hmm. And so there was some fix issued or whatever, and that was supposed to stop. But I believe this is for the build that just came out today. So this is apparently happening again.
I didn't get it on my machine, just so you know. It didn't pop up.
Yeah, it might be tied to business users where some people are enrolled and most aren't, because it seems to be happening in businesses. But this guy says that every Windows 10 Pro system in his office is getting this pop-up after the most recent Windows update.
So do you think it is, when he's saying the most recent, it might be that one that from a week plus ago,
you think it's the same one. Okay, I hope that's
I wonder, because not everybody in a business is on the fast ring, right? Like some of them are on a slower ring.
Almost none of them would be, right? Right. No, you're right. So actually, the most recent build is actually 17.754.
Right, the one that just came out today. Yeah.
This must be just be from the same issue from last week, I guess. Okay. Okay, sorry about that.
No worries.
But anyway, yeah, that was annoying when that happened. And what was the solution for it? I don't remember what it was. If you get that,
use a Mac was the solution.
That's not the answer.
I did not say that.
Walter Mossberg, ladies and gentlemen. No, I don't. I don't actually remember.
All right, TheRock.com.
Yeah, that's the answer. Should we move on to Windows 365, Office 365?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. So this was last week. I have to say, I thought this was one of Microsoft's most confusing blog posts they've done in a while. But it, in the end, what's going to happen for you is good if you're an Office 365 consumer subscriber. So if you're an Office 365 personal home subscriber, you're now going to be able to install Office on all your devices, but only have five users logged. I don't know if it's five users, five device. It's actually five devices logged in at any one time.
Across.
See why it's already confusing.
I know. I was really impressed you were just going to say this. So I still am confused by this, right?
Me too.
The details of it. The basic deal is that as a consumer, you can have with Home Edition, you could have up to six total users, up from five.
Right. Which
but
is
as far
weird
as the limits go, that stuff is weird.
Right. So it's unlimited devices. You can go, if you're an Office 365 Home or personal subscriber, and download it on all your devices, I guess. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that's true of Home, but I'm not sure it's true of personal. Personal is just for a single person, and it may still be that you can install it on one PC or Mac, one tablet, and one phone. But on Office 365 Home, you can, before your home group could be up to five people in your family or whatever you want to designate that group, and you can only have five users in that group. Now you can have six, but not all six of them can be using it at the same time.
Let's read it together.
I'm like, okay.
It is crazy.
It is. What you do get, though, if you want to make your group six people instead of five, everybody who's in that group gets a terabyte of OneDrive storage. So there's going to be six people or six entities that can have 1 terabyte of OneDrive storage as part of the subscription.
I think I can clarify this now.
Okay.
It's install on an unlimited number of devices. This is per user, so it includes personal.
Yep.
You can actively be using it on up to five devices per user. So on personal, you can literally, using it on five exactly, 30, but right? You can do that. But if you have six people in a family and all of them are in your Office 365 Home subscription, they can all, I don't know how that would work, but it is per user is what it looks like.
So you have...
Hopefully someone on Twitter will correct me within 10 seconds because that's how I just read it.
Each user can be signed into five devices at the same time.
What? Why would you need to do that?
Right. That's a good question.
Great. No, so say I'm a household of one person.
It's very logical to ask that.
No, like you can, like if you wanted to be signed in to Office 365 so you can, quote, take advantage of all the latest features and bits and bytes. You know, I might have it on a phone. I might have it on three different PCs in my house, maybe a tablet. So you might be signed in and with multiple devices per person.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean you're actively using five devices at once.
If you are, you're pretty talented, but you're kind of juggling.
Or really inefficient.
And you're still using a Windows phone somehow.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, right, no, you could be using Office 365, the Office apps on your phone. If you know, your normal phones.
Oh, right. Android. Yeah, yes, that's true.
Not your Windows phones.
Right.
Necessarily. Yeah. Yeah, so this thing was confusing, but the good thing is you're not paying any more to do this. They didn't up the subscription cost, so it's still $99.99 for an Office 365 home subscription. It's still $69.99 for an Office 365 personal subscription.
Yeah. Why did they do this?
I asked why. I said, why did you guys do this? And they said for consistency.
Okay.
And I'm like, what?
Oh, boy. Because, you know, Microsoft, they love to be consistent. Okay. Consistency with Microsoft Family, you mean?
Yeah, with Family.
Apparently,
so there's a thing called Microsoft Family, right? Mm-hmm. Which is something you can set up if you have a group of people you want to have within, you know, to share.
Microsoft dictating the size your family can be?
Yeah, they are. It's like the one child policy. Now it's like six people in a family.
Six children left behind.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Okay, it's fine. I'm sure it makes some back end thing easier. It's something no one would ever complain about. But is it something that would put Office 365 over the top for some family? Like, I was going to spend $99 on this thing and get this for five people, mm-hmm. but I need it for six. And now that you're doing six, I'm actually going to buy it. Like, I can't imagine this is too big of a market.
Yeah. I mean, you can designate your family group to be whoever you want, right? It doesn't actually have to be in your family. Like, you could have friends be your family if you want.
Yep.
Could have enemies be in your family.
Yeah, by the way. treating friends like family. That
friends
is.
Like family.
But does the family then, I mean, is the family designed so you can, you know, look at your children's devices and see what they're doing and that sort of thing? Is it the same thing as like the family safety?
Yes, it is actually the successor to that. Yeah, it is. But the family in the sense of Office 365 doesn't have to mean Microsoft Family. So in other words, if you do have Microsoft Family configured and you've set up one or two adults maybe and some number of children and you sign up for Office 365, those people will automatically be included in your Office 365 subscription. They'll all get an email. They'll all have access to the apps. This happens automatically. You can turn it off, but it will happen automatically. But if you're just an adult and you have a spouse or something and you want to share it with five friends, technically you could. I don't think you're supposed to do this, but you could. You just have to send them an invite. They have to have a Microsoft account and they're in. And then at that point, I guess the question is, does that mean there's something shared going on, right? So someone is the administrator of this. But no, I don't believe that would give them access to, say, your OneDrive storage or something like that. It could mean that there are some shared calendar features and so forth. But I don't believe that actually automatically gives you access to, you know, if Mary Jo and I shared a subscription, I wouldn't necessarily see her calendar and I certainly wouldn't see her documents. Because, you know, she wouldn't be configured as a child. I mean, I'm the child in this equation, but, there's no oversight. All I could do is remove her from the subscription. You know, that would be my only recourse for the gong.
But then she would get a terabyte of storage.
Yeah.
Yep.
But would you be able to share, like, you if you buy stuff on the Microsoft Store or apps or movies, would you share those?
So if you just use Office 365, no, that's unconnected to Microsoft Family. Microsoft Family, I mean, I don't really look at it too much. My kids are older now, but I don't believe you couldn't configure a Microsoft Family that consisted of adults for the express purpose of sharing content that you bought through Xbox or the Microsoft Store or whatever. That's not really the point of it. That person would have to have an account that was configured for a child, right? For that kind of sharing to take place. And no one wants that account. That's not really the thing. I honestly think the more frequent or common usage of this kind of thing, using an Office 365 home subscription with multiple accounts, not in a Microsoft family, but, you know, in a pseudo family, is for one or more individuals to have one or more accounts where they can have multiple terabytes of storage, because Microsoft doesn't offer that. Mm-hmm. So if I wanted to go above one terabyte, I really kind of can't, except for a couple of weird little exceptions where you can get additional storage or a few other things. I don't have a way to buy 2 terabytes of storage. So if I had the need for 2 terabytes of storage in OneDrive, I'd have to maintain 2 separate accounts and figure out what was going where. And I bet people do that because there's no other way to do it.
And does this kind of subscription make sense for small businesses or startups, people who are, you know, 3 or 4 people were starting something?
So it makes sense versus legal. You know, for a very small company, it might make sense because it's cheap. But technically, what you're supposed to do is get an Office 365 commercial account, which I believe starts at, I want to say it's $129 a year per person. So you can kind of see the difference. So if you had a small business of 5 people, you'd have to pay, assuming it is 129, I think it is, times 5, not $99.99 per year. And then it's the same deal past that. You have the same basic usage allotments. You have the same installs of Office per user. That, you know, the same terabyte of storage, except it's OneDrive for business, not OneDrive.
Is it time to move on to Outlook?
I feel like I've been tested.
You have. Let's all get a family subscription, you guys, and then we can buy movies and share
them. Guide to abusing a family description to run a small business illegally.
Outlook has a new look. Outlook has a new look on the web. What's new about it?
Yeah. Have you seen this, Mary Jo? Do you have an Office 365 business account?
I do. And what? It was funny. Yesterday, Mahedi was like, can you take a picture of the ribbon of some of your subscriptions and show it to me? So I was showing him. And he's like, so different people are seeing different looks, it seems, right?
And in different apps, sometimes in different browsers. Yep.
I know. That's true. Right. Yeah. So I don't know if Microsoft's doing A/B testing still on this idea of what the new Outlook look should be, but the idea is to give everybody who's using all the different flavors of Outlook the simplified ribbon, which is a collapsible ribbon that's kind of user customizable, so that things that you most want to do can be in the ribbon instead of
this
having
even a good
Microsoft
picture of it.
Dictate this.
That's not a good picture of it.
I know.
Are there pictures below that? No, not really. That's not really a good picture of it.
I know.
Oh, that's because that's for Outlook. This is the wrong thing anyway, isn't it? Oh, no, it isn't. This is the right thing.
No, this is the right thing. Yep.
Okay, so I guess we're actually talking about a couple of different things here then. Actually.
What are you talking about, Paul?
Well,
we're talking about Outlook,
right? we're looking at literally Outlook. So in addition to Outlook, they're also updating the UI for the Office web apps, but not all of them yet. And it's confusing.
Right.
And it's different. Yep. And this is, sorry. So I think this somehow didn't actually make its way explicitly into the notes. So tied to this, I think, is they've updated the UI for Word, PowerPoint, and OneNote on the web, but only in some cases for some users. In my case, I've seen some, but not others. I've never seen Excel. Yep. I assume it's coming eventually. Yep. What it looks like is, well, actually, Megan, are you using the web version of OneNote to?
I am.
See the notes? Can we see what you're seeing, or is that not possible?
There it is.
All right. So this is not the new version. So this is the old version. The new version has a purple header across the top with tabs, and the selected tab is that kind of grayish color, and then the unselected tabs are all purple. Except not always. And that's the confusion. And
you should see a toggle, right, that will say...
Yes, simplified ribbon,
Simplified ribbon, right. And if you click that, then you'll see it and you can go back and forth, you know, use it, don't use it. But I think this week's blog post from Microsoft was saying, okay, so the simplified ribbon is also coming to Outlook for Windows and Outlook on the web, right?
Yeah, and by the way, sorry... it actually does say Excel in that list, so it's coming to Excel as well.
But I haven't seen it like you haven't either.
No, and then look at this picture. See, in this picture, the home tab is not blue. It has a blue underline. But when I go and look at Word on the web, and granted, I'm using the consumer version, it looks like the Office mobile apps. And I also sent pictures to Mehdi, you know, showing him what I saw. And he said, this is not what other people are seeing. I said, I know.
Yeah.
It's kind of confusing.
Yeah. So they've got to still be testing this, I would guess, since we're all seeing different things. But the overall idea is to try to make all the different kinds of outlook that are out there more similar.
And I would extend that to all of Office, right? It's not just Outlook. Like I think they're trying to make Word and Excel and Outlook and all these other apps look similar on the web, on desktop, on mobile.
Right.
I think
so too. It's a long process to get there. And also there is going to be one exception. If you're running Office 2019, the non-subscription version, you know, the standalone version, you're not going to see this. They're not adding it to that. So you'll right. never see the simplified report.
Why would the next version get the new thing?
It's kind of almost like punishment, right? It's like, okay, you're using the non-subscription version, so you're not going to get the simplified ribbon. Or you'll get it 3 years from now, maybe. Yeah.
I remain confused by this.
I know. Yeah. I think what they're going to try to do is tout how they're adding the simplified ribbon to each of the Office apps as it becomes ready. Like I talked to somebody today who said, I got it today.
Yeah. I'm just curious what happens here if I bring it up today. But I wonder if it's different.
In the blog post from yesterday from Microsoft, it said Outlook on the web won't get that opt-in toggle until September 10th. So it's going to be next week when you start seeing that for Outlook on the web. But like you said, different Office apps are getting this at different times.
And
it's just kind of filtering in.
Outlook, I'm looking at, but the Office online apps that are available through office.com have a simplified ribbon switch. It does not look like that thing we just looked at. Yeah. You can turn it off and it goes back to the kind of classic ribbon, right? The taller ribbon.
Yep.
I just double clicked it like an idiot. You can't hide the ribbon. It's either on, you know, it's either big or small. And it's not what Microsoft shows in that video. It's not the same thing. It's new. It is definitely new. This is not what it looked like before, but it is not what they show in that video.
Yeah.
Is it a Office 365 consumer versus commercial thing? And if so, why would they update the UI for both separately and differently?
Right.
I don't know.
Do you both regularly use Outlook?
Yeah.
No, I don't ever use Outlook.
You don't actually, right? Like you're not even kidding.
What do you use?
Outlook. I use Outlook a lot.
I use Google Inbox.
On Windows too? I mean, on the computer, everywhere?
Yeah, as a web app. Yep.
Do you use Outlook on your iPhone?
No, I do have Outlook installed on mobile because I need to test things. I actually like Outlook on mobile, although Outlook on mobile is its own weird little thing because what they really need to do is separate it into separate apps. Mm-hmm. You know, Outlook on mobile works like it does on the computer where it's just one app that does everything. And I think most people on mobile have this mindset where calendar is a different thing than email because it is. And, you know, most companies that make these solutions don't have one app that does everything. Mm-hmm. It's a little old fashioned.
Do you use it on Android, Mary Jo?
No. I use 9 on Android because there's a problem with contact syncing still that's not addressed by Microsoft yet with Outlook.
Right.
Yeah. It's one of those things that says, yes, we know this is an issue and we're working on it. I think it's been an issue for like 2 years or 3. But yeah.
But you don't use 9 on your Surface or anything?
No, I use Outlook on all my PCs. I'm just so used to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just the way I use mail.
No, people live and die in it. Mostly die.
I also do use Windows 10 Mail, but it's not as feature complete as Outlook. It's very simple.
Yeah.
And neither of you use Newton that was on PCs too.
Oh, no, Brad was a big Newton user and he's still mourning its loss. I think he mentions it almost every day.
He does. I was a fan of Newton as well.
Yeah. And they really were going to make a calendar app, remember? And
they were.
I thought, here we go.
That's sad. What does he use now? I mean, I guess he can keep using Newton for another month or something.
I think he is doing that. And I think his rough plan is just to use the whatever the, you know, the Windows Mail app on Windows. And then I'm not sure he has an iPhone. I don't know.
He does.
I'm sure he's interviewing mail apps as we speak.
He put out a call.
There was one. Why doesn't he use 9? He can use 9 on his iPhone, right?
I have no stake in what he uses. so I don't know.
9 is excellent. I will give 9 like lots of love.
9 out of 10.
It's better than Outlook.
I saw something in PC World about Mailbird. Have you ever heard of Mailbird?
No.
That's something that's claiming to be as good as Newton.
Yeah, Mailbird, I think, started on Mac only, and then they eventually went to other platforms. I think you have to pay for it, though.
You had to pay for Newton, too.
Yeah, you have to pay for 9.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot, but you
have
to pay.
It's okay to pay for apps.
Yeah.
I agree. I mean, well, for example, I use Google Inbox as a web app on Windows because on Windows you can do this nice thing with Chrome where it's nice. It's its own app. They just added that capability to the Mac, but it actually doesn't work as seamlessly as it does on Windows because every time you click on that web app, the Chrome window opens as well. And it's not quite the same, but there's an app on the Mac. I think it's called Boxy, which is basically just a $2 or $3 version of the Google Inbox app in the store. And it's, I paid for that. I actually really like it. Mm. And then you can command tab to it normally, which you can't do with the web apps in Chrome, which was the problem actually.
Boxy, $5.99.
Yeah, $5.99. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. It's just exactly a Google Inbox. So if you use Google Inbox, and you want something you can command tab to on the Mac, this is not a Mac show, but there's your app pick of the week. It's a good one. I use it on the Mac.
I just downloaded it on my Windows machine.
Yes. Yes.
I might have worn out that joke by now. should we go move on to Skype, or is there more to say about Outlook?
Just that I hate it so much and I wish it would go away.
Well, before
what's the hate?
You hate and think about Skype and your hate, and then I'll take this time to thank
Anakin Skywalker over here.
Okay. Rocket Mortgage, we love them. If you are in the market for a house, even if you're thinking, even if you have an inkling, even if you have a little, just tiny idea that maybe in the future you would like to buy a house, then start thinking about Rocket Mortgage, because they have thrown technology at the problem of a mortgage. Buying a home is not fun. It's not fun at all. I mean, it's fun to actually have a home, but the idea of like being stressed about rising interest rates, that is stressful. There's unpredictability when it comes to buying a house, and it causes a lot of anxiety. And Rocket Mortgage is thinking of you and wants to help you with that anxiety. So what they have is called the power buying process. So let me tell you about that. Here's how it works. You answer a few questions. They're not hard questions. You probably have the answers to these questions because they are about you. And then they'll check your credit for a pre-qualified approval. Quicken Loans will verify your income, your assets, and your credit. And it only takes around 24 hours, less than 24 hours, actually, to give you a verified approval. And that will give you the strength of a cash buyer. Then you are verified. Once you're verified, and we hope that you are, you will qualify for their all-new exclusive Rate Shield approval. First, they will lock up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. Now, here's the best part. If rates go up, your rate will stay the same. But if rates go down, then your rate also drops. Either way, you win. It's the kind of thinking you'd expect from America's largest mortgage lender. I know you want to get started, so stop feeling anxious about your home buying and go to rocketmortgage.com/windows. Now, Rate Shield approval, I have to tell you, is only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. They are an equal housing lender. They're licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. Just to find out more information, go to rocketmortgage.com/windows. rocketmortgage.com/windows. And we thank Rocket Mortgage for their support of Windows Weekly. All right. Skype has some updates, some design changes, some design backward changes, going back to an old design.
We should have used the picture from back. No, what's the movie where they held up? Yeah, Men in Black, where they held up the wand and like, forget everything that just happened. We're just going to forget the last year happened for Skype.
Forget we tried to last year. Snapchat. We're not.
Yeah. Last year they were like, yeah, they were, last year they thought they were going to hit, you know, be a hit with the kids, you know, and they took this tool that I think is probably used more in businesses or for business type purposes than it is used for sending emojis to other people. Although Mary Jo does stand in sharp contrast on that particular note.
send him a lot of emojis.
She does. Yeah. What do they call when they're animated? Those emojis? Is that what those are? Little jumping hedgehogs and whatnot.
Animated stickers sometimes.
Yeah, those call them whatever that. They are.
Whatever's most annoying, I send to him.
Yeah. Yeah, she's getting pretty good at it. At the emoji thing, I mean. I guess that wasn't clear. So anyway, a year ago they announced this big redesign, modern Skype. It was going to be the same across platforms, and it involved a lot of animations and things going. There's like squiggly lines happening all over the place, and single screen interface that kind of works like it does on mobile. Kind of weird features like highlights and moments and things. It was like Snapchat, you know. I'm told, because I never use Snapchat, because I'm an adult. But anyway, they're basically, it's funny, they responded to the criticism pretty quickly. And they said, look, we're listening to you. We're going to make this right. And they made some changes and they kind of updated some things. But it seemed like they were going to plow forward with this. And then this past week they announced, they didn't say it this way, but basically, we're going to stop doing this. You know, and they actually stepped backwards. They got rid of some stuff that they added previously, which is pretty amazing, right? I mean, this is something I'd like to see more often from Microsoft. So, you know, it's too bad they made the mistake, but it's cool that they're fixing it.
Yeah, they tried to kind of hide this blog post. It came out right before Labor Day at the end of the day on Friday. But you know what, guys? Be proud of this, because it's great you are listening to customers and people didn't want what you were doing. And it's good that you're trying to go back to the way people do want.
People wonder why I complain so much. It's because I always get my way.
Skype OG.
Do you?
No, not really. But we didn't. This is in the notes, I don't think, unless you have. Did you save something?
No, we forgot to put in the call-in.
Yeah,
right?
The recording. Yeah.
So, yeah, the other thing that's rolling out to most versions of Skype, though not the Windows 10 version, the UWP version, is the ability to do call recording in Skype. So I think it's rolling out to every other version of Skype, the Windows desktop and the other platforms, but no ETA on when, if, or how it will come to the UWP version of Skype.
And no explanation of why this didn't appear 15 years ago when I first needed it. You know, unlike the highlights and the animated little squiggles, this is something that I think most Skype users have actually been looking for, the ability to record a call. Yeah. I don't think it'd be good for a podcast type scenario, but I still use Skype a lot to make work calls for meetings and for interviews with people from Microsoft or other companies, whatever it is. And I take notes and I type fast, but I also type very messily. And so it's nice to be able to go back and get a quote accurate or whatever it might be. Mary Jo certainly has had this experience, as have had I, where someone will come back and say, I did not say that. And actually, here's a recording of you saying it. So, you know, it's obviously a great feature. So again, I kind of wish it had happened earlier, but I'm glad at least it's happening.
Yep. And don't worry, for people who've said to me, I don't want call recording. I don't want people secretly recording my calls. It lets people know in the group if somebody in the group is doing a call recording.
Yeah, guys, this isn't Google call recording. This is Microsoft. They're not going to do.
And is it not good for podcasting because of the sound quality?
No, because in podcasting, you're going to want to do things like we've been doing here, where you change the view and you switch between different things. You know, Skype has automated features like these kind of things do, where the person who's talking might be more prominent or whatever, but you don't really have scene shifting capability. You know, Skype is not a a dedicated podcasting all-in-one solution. Like, it doesn't have all the stuff you need to do a professional podcast. If it was just two guys sitting there, well, actually, I think it's just call recording, right? It's not video, is it?
Oh, that's what I was wondering.
I'm sorry. Yeah, okay, so for just audio. Oh, actually, if it's just for audio, maybe that would be okay for an audio podcast.
Yeah. So when I do audio podcasts, often not here, but for other networks, they ask me to record it. So I have, I just go in and record it.
You find
it.
Some third-party tool or whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I haven't done this in a long time, but I used to use something like Pamela, I think was the name of one of the things back in the day. And there were various third-party apps, and you used to have to spend time trying to find something that worked. Then you have to test it. For it to be built. Actually, right. For that kind of thing, it would be good. Yeah, mm-hmm. For an audio. It could be okay for an audio podcast. Who does audio podcast? What is this, 1979?
Yeah, and also it is a video calling recording thing too, though.
It is.
Yep. Oh, it does do.
Yeah.
Video. Good. So you could see if someone scratched their ear, did some sort of sign when they...
Sure.
A secret message.
Yeah. All right. So, I thought I saw somewhere that the quality wasn't great, though. I thought I saw that on Twitter, but have you guys
seen it? Yeah, that could be. I mean, like I said, I would want it just to record meetings or interviews or whatever, just so you have the quote right. To me, that would be huge. Mm-hmm. The quality, I wouldn't think of it as something for publication. I would just think of it as something for me to have for part of my note taking. All it has to do is achieve that. Although, they'll probably improve it over time. I'm sure by this time next year, we'll have squiggles in it.
And
don't give them ideas.
Squiggles.
So you have to let everyone know that you're recording, but they don't have to approve it? Or I guess it's just like when you call and say this call may be recorded for...
Right. Hang up now if you don't want to be part of this.
Got it. So the Surface Plus for consumers, the financing program that is quietly going away?
Yeah, this is another one that was kind of like, hey, surprise, Labor Day weekend post here. On MSFT.com, found this first. They went to the Surface Plus financing page, and there was a little note there that said, Microsoft is ending new enrollment in the Surface Plus program financed by Klarna starting August 31st, 2018, which was last Friday. There was no advance notice that this was happening. Microsoft just... they just announced this program almost exactly a year ago. It was supposed to be a way to finance your Surface devices, mostly for students, but also for consumers. And I remember when this came out, we talked a lot about it on Windows Weekly as, a whole way of opening up the market to more people. And it really brought down the price of all different kinds of Surface devices. You could buy them, like say a Surface Pro for $34 a month for over a period of 24 months. So if you're already in this program, you can continue and you will still own the device at the end of the period when your financing is complete, but no new entrants. So I have a theory about what this is. I asked and Microsoft wouldn't comment why they did it. But I wonder if they're trying to get this program going under something like the Dell financing, the Dell Preferred financing, and kind of consolidate the place where everybody is doing the financing.
I thought the same thing.
If they were doing this, though, you'd think they kind of would put that in place before they kill the other program or simultaneously with killing the other program, but they haven't said that they're moving to Dell Preferred. They haven't said anything about it. They haven't said if they even plan to continue to have a consumer financing plan for Surface.
Right.
So, I don't know.
Look, this system always made sense. It made sense last week when they announced it for the Xbox, right? The Xbox All Access subscription. Mm-hmm. This is not like a financial show, but we were just talking about this topic last week and here it is, it's happening again. I mean, not everyone has $2,000 in their pocket that they can spend. And if you put $2,000 on a credit card and you pay it off over some period of time, you pay interest, it's expensive. And so for people with good credit, you qualify for a zero interest loan in this thing. And so it literally is a way to spread out that exact payment over 24 months. You pay it off early. Yep. You own it at the end. It's not like a lease or a loan or a loan or device or rental or whatever. This is the way a lot of people buy phones. Like I said last week, I do this with the iPhone. I do this with the Google phones. Both of those companies through a third party offer 0% financing. And so I usually pay it off in, 2 or 3 months or whatever. I don't wait 24 months, but I don't have $1,000 in that case in my pocket and I don't have $2,000 in my pocket. So It's a good idea. I hope they bring this back. And I sort of, like you, I wondered the same thing. Why would Microsoft be working with multiple credit companies? Maybe they want to consolidate under a single company.
Yeah.
Well, do you think it has something to do with what you were talking about last week? I mean, do you think they would have a program where instead of just owning the Surface at the end, you turned it back in for the new Surface?
Oh, so actually, that is how Surface Plus worked. That was part of, you could do that if that's what you wanted to do. You still own the device, though, at the end, right? But if you wanted just to continue it, I don't quite understand the point of that. Or maybe you could turn it in and maybe I'm confusing this with the business version of it. I thought there was a version of this where you could do exactly that.
Where you always get the newest. Yeah, I think that is the business
version. After 2 years, you get, maybe that's the business version. Okay.
Because it's not.
Because you do own it.
Oh, you do own it. Because I know with the...
Well, in other words, I'm sorry.
With the iPhone, and it sounded like with the new Xbox program too, you didn't really own it at the end. You could turn it back.
No, you do.
So you didn't have to pay more to own it?
No, it's yours. And so at the end of the 2 years with the Xbox version, it's up to you if you want to continue subscribing to Xbox Live Gold and or Xbox Game Pass. But the device is yours. You own it. And with the Surface, right. If you did the math on it on Surface Plus, if your Surface came out to... $2,000, let's make up numbers, and 2,000 divided by 24 something was $50 a month or whatever that is. That's what the payment was. There's no gotcha moment there. It's just 0% interest. You get the spread of the payments and then it's yours.
But I guess the idea is that with the phone, it's like you're really buying a new device every year.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, if you're smart, you're not doing it every year. But, for people like me who write about this stuff, $1,000 is not an easy pill to swallow. I don't have a relationship with those companies. So, what am I going to do? But hopefully you would use the phone for 2 or 3 years. Most people probably, I hope, are using it for at least two. When you buy a phone outright, in that case, I traded in too. And so you can do it through the company at purchase time. You can do it through a third party if you want to get more money for it or whatever. I mean, it's just, it's like anything else. You have choices. You can do whatever you want. But I think the system where you kind of the iPhone upgrade program. So in other words, you pay X number of dollars a month and then every year you get a new phone. Over that 12-month period, you're not buying a new phone. You're paying for the whole phone over 2 years, but you have the option every year to get the next phone. And I think that's attractive to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
If they did the math on it, it might be slightly less attractive, but people are really into this stuff. I don't think that kind of thing makes a ton of sense for consumers buying PCs because we don't replace our computers that quickly. And the benefit between a Surface Pro 3 or a Surface Pro 4 going to whatever the next Surface Pro might be called is probably not humongous, right? I mean, it is definitely going to be better. But for the average PC user, I don't think it's going to be a big deal.
But Mary Jo's grandpa would have loved it.
He would have. Yeah. He was the guy who wanted to get a new car every year. So that's like, there are people like that. The other thing I didn't mention though is maybe this isn't about Dell preferred. There's another service that I've written about a little bit, that I keep thinking Microsoft may announce at Ignite. That may be called the Microsoft Managed Desktop. And that is also potentially a financing program where you buy a Windows 10 device, a Surface, or maybe something else too, and you get Office 365, and you get Windows 10, and you get Intune, the whole Microsoft 365 bundle, plus regular updates and all that. And Microsoft somehow manages this for you as part of the subscription price. So maybe the reason they did away with the consumer program was there'll be some way for consumers also to opt into this. I had heard it was a business program, but maybe there'll be a business and a consumer version. But it'll be an opt-in. It'll be optional. It's not Microsoft is going to do this and force everybody to do this. which we've seen other people report. Based on these early reports.
Microsoft reporter Mary Jo Foley has once again confirmed Microsoft's plans to screw over consumers.
Exactly.
With a subscription service.
I do this weekly. That's why we call it Windows Weekly. So it could just be them clearing the decks for that, right? It could be like, okay, let's do away with this finance program because we have something bigger and better and more tied to Microsoft 365 coming.
Okay. I didn't think the I didn't think of this plan, but when I said earlier, I thought this was maybe related to them going with somebody else. I just meant that generally speaking, like, this plan makes too much sense. I don't quite get why they wouldn't do this. There is a business version of it. The business version is going to be a lot more lucrative because, as you're saying, the managed desktop offering, you can tie it to a bunch of other things. I sort of feel like this is going to come back in some capacity, whatever form it takes.
So the Xbox is getting more accessible with the adaptive controller that's available now?
Yeah. So there's not a lot new to say about the controller. It was announced earlier this year. You could pre-order it, and now you can just buy it. So $99.99. It's designed for gamers who have limited mobility and can't use a normal hand controller. They've gotten a lot of accolades for doing this. I look at that thing and I don't quite understand how it works, but I mean, it's configured, it's kind of modular and configurable and you can make it work in different ways. And there's nothing to argue about here. It's just such a, it's such a cool idea that they're taking the lead on this kind of thing. So that's great. So the point is just that it's generally available. And then this is another short one, is PUBG is a game that it is available actually on the PC and mobile, but it's been kind of tied with the Xbox and has been an Xbox console exclusive since its release in kind of a preview or pre-release format several months ago. But it just hit 1.0, so now it's kind of in general release. It doesn't really change anything from the perspective of people playing the game, beyond the fact that they've added a few things to the game, like an additional level and so forth. But in the scheme of Xbox games, it's fairly cheap. It's $29.99. It's very popular. There are several million people playing it on just the Xbox. But the question here, of course, is now that it's kind of done, baked or whatever, will the company that makes it release it on the PlayStation, which I have to imagine they probably will. But it is out now, if you're into such things.
It's like Fortnite, right?
Yeah. In fact, it predates Fortnite, which is kind of interesting. But Fortnite improved on PUBG in a few different ways. The key way being they used kind of cartoon graphics, which run much more quickly, which is what you want on a massive multiplayer game with many, many players. And then they added additional things like the construction features and so forth. But yeah, they're similar type of games.
All right, well, it's almost time for the tips of the week, the apps of the week, the beer pick of the week that someone like 45 minutes ago in the chat room was already eager to hear. But it's also time right now for me to thank Qualcomm because they are the sponsor of this episode, Qualcomm Snapdragon. It's an easy question that I'm going to ask you. Do you want faster speeds on your phone? No one says no to that question. That's a silly question. Of course you want faster speeds on your phone because waiting is annoying and you don't want to do any more of it. And Qualcomm Snapdragon doesn't want you to wait anymore either. They don't want you to wait. They don't want you to have one bar of signal and they don't want it to take forever to finish downloading your music playlist. You can get faster data speeds even without switching carriers. Turns out all you need is the right phone. Ookla analyzed over 1 million real-world results from the speed test app. These results were taken by users just like you who used AT&T and T-Mobile in Q2 and found that Android phones with Snapdragon 845 from Qualcomm Technologies had up to 192% faster data speeds than non-Android phones with Intel modems. That's 192% faster. That's a lot faster. And the Snapdragon 845 mobile platform is engineered with powerful features that allow you to do even more with your phone. Immersive XR experiences. The third generation Qualcomm Hexagon 685 DSP supports sophisticated on-device AI processing, delivering richer camera, voice, XR, and gaming experiences. They also have advanced vault-like security. It's designed with a new Qualcomm secure processing unit that's engineered to help protect your personal data. Biometrics used for authentication can be stored in isolation, keeping precious data out of prying eyes. It's also energy efficient and engineered for all-day battery life, capable of up to 50% charge in only 15 minutes. you can check out all this data yourself. You can read all about it. You can even read more than what I've already told you. Their website has tons of information. So read for yourself. Go to qualcomm.com/twit. Then upgrade your data speeds with a phone powered by Snapdragon 845. That's qualcomm.com/twit. Make sure you include the TWIT so they know that we sent you to them. And we thank Qualcomm Snapdragon for their support of Windows Weekly. All right, tip of the week, the Surface Pro bundle tip. Whose tip is that?
That's for me.
Okay.
Last week, Microsoft had kind of a quick sale on Surface Pro where every model, including the LT model, was $200 off. That sale actually ended 2 days ago, but not part of that sale, but it was also on the site at the time. There was a Surface Pro bundle, which is the Core i5, 8 gigs of RAM, 120 gigs of storage with a type cover, which is normally $129 for $360 off. At the time of the sale last week, this was actually the best deal by far. And it is still there. So I don't know how long this is going to last. And certainly we expect Microsoft to release or announce new Surface PCs sometime in October. But the existing Surface Pro is wonderful. And this is the lowest price ever. I think it's $799 for that bundle, which is it's incredible. It's a really good deal. So if you're in the market for a Surface Pro, definitely take a look at that. I think it's only available through the Microsoft Store. Yeah, normally $799 buys you the Core M3 version of this thing with no type cover. Actually, the Platinum Signature type cover is worth $169, I think. $159. It's more expensive. It's nice.
Also special pricing for eligible students, parents, teachers, and military.
Yeah, that's not a special deal, but yes. Yeah, you can save money at Microsoft if you are one of those people too. And then the app pick of the week, actually, there are two. This has been kind of a nice week for browser fans, unless you want Microsoft Edge, I guess. Firefox 62 is out. It has a number of changes. I always download these things and kind of check them out. But the first thing that struck me was the quality of the rendering of the text in the new version of Firefox. And I guess it supports variable fonts. Yeah, there you go in the graphic. To me, what this looks like is the way that Microsoft Edge renders text. It's one of the few things I really, really like about Edge. And it looks beautiful. It's just a really nice looking text. So if you're into that kind of thing, you might want to check it out. If you're running Firefox, obviously you'll probably just get it automatically. Earlier this week, Google also released Chrome 69, which is now comes with the Material Design Refresh built in by default. And I think I just saw, yeah, actually it's in that picture. It's also available on mobile as well. So I've been using, you know, the Chrome flags switches you can flip to make this UI come on. Now I guess it's just available by default. So if you've been looking forward to that UI and you like the color white and you like rounded rectangles, it's available now.
So I never see UI changes. Like I never mm-hmm. notice them, but when I got the new Chrome tabs that have the rounded corners, I'm like, wow, my tabs just got so big. It feels like they're bigger, like taller.
Yeah.
Are they?
I bet they are a little taller. Yeah.
It feels like there's more like.
There's more there.
I don't know. Yeah. More there. I kind of like it.
I'm glad you noticed it. Yeah. I like it.
It feels
less like
squished.
And if you use the accent color on window title bars and so forth in Windows 10, it will take on that title bar color. So I don't use that either. But we were talking earlier about the Office redesign and that, remember the simplified ribbon with the color at the top. That's what it looks like. Yeah. It takes on that color at the top with the tabs. It's really nice. You know, if you're into that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And how about the enterprise pick of the week?
So you know when you come back from a long weekend and everything goes wrong?
Yes.
Yep.
This was Microsoft's day yesterday. What happened was a lot of people started sending me notes early on Tuesday, right after Labor Day here. And they were like, hey, Visual Studio Team Services is down. I was like, well, that goes down every day. So who cares, right? Then people were like, well, Office 365 is down. Well, I can't do this. I can't do that. So I looked into it and Microsoft's South Central U.S. data center, which is around San Antonio, got hit with a lightning strike, or it hit right near the data center. And it seems like what happened after that was all the power went down, including the cooling systems. And, you know, data centers without cooling systems aren't very useful. And then the whole data center just kind of shut itself down as a security measure. So all the networking equipment started powering itself down. I think they had to evacuate the data center. Not that there are a ton of people in there, but, you know, they had to leave. Then people who weren't having their data loads actually managed by that data center started being impacted as far away as Europe and Southeast Asia, because everybody started trying to authenticate against this data center that was down. And so it had like a rippling effect. Some people are still down today. Like they are having trouble accessing some Office 365 services. Some people are getting throttling messages about services being throttled, which may not even be a correct message.
Are they getting throttled?
You're getting throttled. You've been throttled.
So it hasn't been a good couple days
for Microsoft. And I made it the enterprise pick because a lot of people still today are sending me texts going, you know, hey, do you know what's going on with Office 365? Or I can't access Azure Active Directory at all. Like, what's going on? That's what's going on. And the effects are still kind of playing themselves out even today. And I don't even know if it'll still be happening tomorrow, but yeah. And for people who, I've had a few people ask, you know, number one, is Microsoft going to do a postmortem on this so that we know what happened and blah, blah, blah? Probably not. Just the messages they've been putting out on Twitter, the Azure status page and all are probably all we're going to get. But one interesting thing was people are like, wow, why didn't they have a failover plan for their data center? They did. They tried to fail over to another data center, but there were so many people hitting this data center with authentication requests that they couldn't even fail over to another data center. So lots of lessons to be learned here. Don't take the lesson being, that's why I don't put my stuff in the cloud, which I had only about two people say to me. I said, well, what would happen if your IT shop got hit by a lightning strike? And that sort of ended that line of thought there. But yeah,
I cannot believe there are still people like that.
Oh, there are. That's if you've been having problems with your Microsoft cloud services, now you know why. That's my enterprise pick.
How about the small business pick of the week?
Yeah, I don't usually do this kind of a pick, but this is another one. We talked about bad news dump before Labor Day. Here was another one. If you happen to be using some of the Microsoft Office 365 small business subscriptions, there were a couple of apps in there that are being discontinued as of November 30th, which we just found out late last week. One of these is called Listings. It's an app for publishing business information, kind of like an online web presence management tool. And the other one is called Microsoft Connections, which was a simple email marketing tool. Both these apps were parts of Office 365 Business Premium and Microsoft 365 Business subscriptions. Microsoft's just not going to make them anymore. That's it. They're discontinuing them. They're getting rid of them. There are other small business apps that they're keeping, like bookings and invoicing. But if you are using Connections or Listings, you need to get your data out of there because Microsoft is just not going to continue with them. Why? We don't know. There's no reason given why they're being discontinued. They just said, after a great deal of thought, we've decided not to continue with this. So if you are a user of these, you'll be getting a note from Microsoft in your Office 365 management portal about them being discontinued, or an email perhaps from them. So you will get a notification, but that's it. They're done.
Now I guess it's time for the beer pick of the week. Do we have anything? Did I miss anything? Did anything happen while we were talking?
Live breaking news.
Nope. Any breaking Microsoft news?
Then forget.
All right. Then it's time to drink beer.
It is. We need a happy beer pick after my two kind of downer enterprise and SMB picks. So, you know, sometimes I drink a beer and then another year I go back and drink it again. And I'm like, wow, I used to really like that. Now I don't like it anymore. Hmm. Well, there are some beers that are a pleasant surprise. And this one, this week's pick called Founders Double Trouble, is one of those. This was one of the very first craft beers I think I ever had. It's a double IPA. It's pretty high alcohol, 9.4%. But it's got just the right amount of hops. It's sweet in all the right ways. It's very solid. And it still tastes just as good to me as when I used to drink it several years ago. It's from Founders
of
Michigan.
Does it come with a Surface Dock? What's that thing at the top there?
Yeah, a little Surface Dock you get free with every beer right there. Yeah, it's truly double trouble because it's a double IPA and it's doubly high in alcohol, but you know, it's still worth drinking, I would say. It's definitely one of my favorite go-to beers of this style.
I like the looks of it. I like the label.
Yeah, the label's good.
Do you ever drink kombucha, Mary Jo?
I do. I like it.
Like the alcohol,
there's an alcohol version?
There's like a high alcohol level. Right, all
my
of them have
a base alcohol. The farmer's market. I wasn't aware of the alcohol angle. I thought it was something for your gut stuff whatever.
It's both.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's good. It tastes.
I wonder if she's been in such a good mood lately.
It's like vinegar, but in a good way. But yeah, there is no such thing as a non-alcohol one, I don't think. Like even they have trace amounts of alcohol because they're fermented.
I mean, I think my daughter's drinking this.
Yeah, it's like 0.1%. It's something really low.
But then there are high alcohol level ones
there
too.
There are.
Right, yeah.
Is it weird that she drinks it in a martini glass? I don't know.
Maybe it's time for parental intervention.
Kind of a hands-off kind of parenting person.
Wait, how old is she?
16.
How old? 17?
16.
Yeah, she can have kombucha. You know,
we just went to Europe, and that means she can drink.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? Yep. No questions asked.
Yeah, no, I think there are trace amounts. They moved them away from, like, the you know, regular drinks in our grocery store because of that. Sorry. But... yeah, but then I ordered one once at a brewery because I had a beer and I didn't want another one. And then it was a high alcohol. It had like 7% alcohol in it.
Wow.
I drank it anyway. But
maybe I could get behind this drink now.
And yeah, it's good for
your gut. I thought
it was
a filthy hipster affectation, but now I'm interested.
Yeah. It is that too. It's all those things.
It tastes like a sour beer, right? It has that vinegary.
Yeah, it does have. Yeah, it's that fermented weirdness, you know.
Yeah.
A little like cider too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I think that brings us to the end of this show.
And now her true self can come out at last.
But I get to come back next week. You get me again if you'll have me. Maybe 2 more weeks. I don't even know. Maybe forever. She's who knows if she's coming
that's
back.
Fine. Whatever.
we're on Tuesday next week, not Wednesday.
Oh,
right?
Yes. We are on Tuesday. Something big is happening on Wednesday with, you know,
the
Apple.
Other company that you love.
Like an insurance company from California or something.
Right. So we'll be here Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific.
I'll never remember this.
Yes. I'll remind you.
Today's kind of like Tuesday, though, because of the holiday.
Yeah, it's true. You know. So it'll just feel the same. Yeah. So thanks for reminding me. Next week, Tuesday. But, you know, if you don't watch live, you can subscribe and listen or watch wherever and whenever you want. Go to twit.tv/ww to subscribe. And we hope that you do. And tell your friends because we have a lot of fun here, I think. Mary Jo Foley, where is the best place for people to follow you if they haven't just gotten enough of you?
You can go to allaboutmicrosoft.com, which is my blog at ZDNet, or on Twitter at Mary Jo Foley.
And don't email you and say, that's why I don't keep things in the cloud.
Exactly. No, you can say that if you want. But
do you respond with, Dear Chicken Little?
No, I sent back, well, when your data center gets hit with a lightning strike, let me know how it goes.
Okay.
And Paul, where's the best place for people to find all of your...
Therot.com. And I'm at Therot, the easiest name on the internet to spell.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason.
By next Tuesday, hopefully you've tried some more kombucha so we can discuss silly hipster affectations. Yeah.
Kombucha pick of the week, perhaps.
Yes.
Right. That would be a 6-week segment. There aren't really that many choices.
Oh, there are a lot.
Oh.
I'm just at the farmer's market. I mean, I don't know.
Go to Whole Foods. They have a ton of them.
They do.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
And thank you all for watching Windows Weekly. Next Tuesday, be here. Subscribe. I'm Megan Maroney. I'm at Megan Maroney on Twitter. And we'll see you next week.